It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, but before we get started, I do want to take a moment to say thank you to you. As you know, we wrapped up our end-of-year membership drive yesterday. We ended it last night at 7 o'clock, and we had a big, big goal for the membership drive, $180,000, and it really came down to the very last minute. We actually crossed that finish line at 7:01 last night. But we heard from so many individuals, more than 2,260 listeners who invested in Iowa Public Radio. And of course, so many people are members and have supported Iowa Public Radio through the years and throughout this year. So thank you very much. We are listener-supported public radio, and we say it a lot, but it bears repeating, we really can't do what we do here without you. So thank you for making it possible. And this is our last Horticulture Day of 2016. Hort Day will be back on the air every other week starting on January 6th. It will return weekly again, of course, in March. And with me today is Richard Duran from Iowa State University Extension. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And Aaron Stile is also here, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. Hello, Aaron.
Good morning.
Thank you both for being here. And in a few minutes, we are going to talk some gift ideas for gardeners, and we want to hear your suggestions as well. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. But let's start with one of the ways that people bring a little color and life into the winter season. And let's start by talking about amaryllis bulbs. We can buy them pretty much anywhere these days, right?
Yeah, they're available just about everywhere. You see the little boxes. Sometimes they're just the bulbs. Sometimes they're sold as kits. But any way you want to purchase them, they're a really nice way to add some color this time of year.
And when we're buying an amaryllis bulb, do we need to think about quality, or will any one of those boxes get us where we want to be?
Bigger is better in this situation. So the bigger the bulb, and you want a nice kind of firm, heavy bulb, those are going to do better for you than smaller ones. And these are really large bulbs, so even a small one is much larger than the tulip and daffodil bulbs that we're used to seeing outside.
Sure, so you're almost talking baseball size?
Oh, at least.
Softball.
Yeah, softball.
Okay.
Yeah, sometimes even a little bit bigger. Those are the really expensive ones, but the bigger the bulb, the better the bloom. And sometimes the bigger the bulb, you can get more than one bloom stalk off of it, too, which is really wonderful.
And, of course, it's a pretty easy thing to do. That's one of the reasons that they're so popular.
They
a great
really easy
project for kids. But give me some guidance. So when you pot it up, is there anything special you need to think about?
Well, if you buy one of the kits, make sure that the pot that comes in the kit has a drainage hole. These need to have drainage holes. If they sit in water or really wet soil, they are going to suffer a lot. So if it doesn't have drainage holes, make sure you get a pot that does. The pot will look small compared to the bulb, and that's just fine. The pot only needs to be a couple inches wider than the bulb itself, and the bulb will stick halfway out of the soil when you're done planting it. So it'll look a little funny, I guess, compared to planting other kinds of things, but a small pot is just fine. Usually the kits come with like this funny compressed disc of peat moss or sphagnum moss. Just get rid of that. That stuff is so awful to work with. It's not the greatest. There's usually not enough in there anyway to pot the bulb up. A good potting soil works very well and is much preferred over that compressed hockey puck thing that you find inside those kits.
Okay. As far as the pot, I typically like a clay pot because it has the added weight.
Yes.
Because they tend to get very top heavy. And so having a clay pot, and I also use an azalea pot.
That's a little squattier.
Right, which is wider than tall, and it's more stable that way. But make sure it has drainage, and use a heavy pot.
Okay, so both of you prefer your own pot for potting up the...
I do.
And your own soil.
Yes, yes.
All right, now how about location? Because, again, this is something that's so simple to do, and I know a lot of people like to bring them into the office for a little bit of light.
Yeah.
Do you need a window?
Well, at the very beginning, maybe not. For maybe the first couple weeks before it really starts to put on any top growth, you won't need a lot of light. But as soon as that flower stalk starts to rise up above the bulb, you are going to want to get it to a spot where it gets a pretty generous amount of light. That way the flower stalk doesn't get too lanky and it doesn't lean too much, which also means that it helps a lot to rotate this bulb every day. Because that stalk, you know, sometimes I see amaryllis with a stalk that's only 12 or 18 inches tall, and those look really great. They were grown under really high light concentration or really high light intensity. In our homes, most of the time, the stalk will get a little bit taller than that. And it will
lean.
And if
it's leaning one direction,
yes,
in the plastic
it will tip
pot
over.
That you bought with the
yes.
Kit, right?
Yes, with that hockey puck compressed stuff, it will tip over. And so making sure that you rotate it every day and put it in as bright of a location as you can find will help with that a lot.
All right, regular watering, how often?
Yes, water when it needs it. It will want to dry out just a little bit between waterings. So it's hard to say, you know, some people's houses are drier or those kinds of things. So it's really difficult to universally say water every week or something like that. But check the soil when you turn it. And if it's dry to the touch, then give it a little bit of water.
All right. And do you have a favorite variety? They're so showy and so pretty.
They are. For me, I really like this, the all red ones. I mean, there's the pink and white striped, and there's some really nice white ones. But that and the classic cultivar for all red is Red Lion, and it's just a really lovely color, especially
also,
this time of year.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas is another
a nice
one.
Bright
yeah.
red.
Yeah, I like just the really nice red one.
All right. And speaking of the holiday season, so if you get one now and you pot it now, when will it bloom?
That's hard to say.
It's hard to say. Most of the time you can guess between 6 and 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. But occasionally one will be a little slow to take off, and occasionally one will bloom in 4 weeks. So it's not an exact science. If you want one to be in bloom on Christmas Day for some reason or something like that, you may have to buy several and start them all and hope that at least one of them will be there.
All right. Well, I really need the blooms in January more than I need them in December anyway, in February.
Yeah. Really. And they're nice then, too.
All right. So once it grows and you have this beautiful bloom and this incredibly healthy plant, it's so green and succulent. And then after that, what do you do with it?
So you have two options, basically.
Yeah, you do have two options. You can get rid of it, and there's no harm in that. There's no shame in that either. And get a new one next year. It allows you to get a different color or try something different. If you do want to keep it and get it to rebloom year after year, you're going to hold on to it in a nice, bright, sunny location until it's warm enough to put it outside, which is going to be after the first frost day. Actually, several weeks after the first frost date, typically. So end of May-ish, you'll move it outside. You'll want to fertilize it every other time you water, approximately with half-strength fertilizer. It's going to want a lot of nutrition. It's going to want a fair amount of light. You won't be able to just take it from your house and put it directly in full sun. That will burn all the leaves up. You'll have to transition it to full sun, but put it outside. You can sink the pot into the ground. You're going to treat it just like any other plant throughout the summer. And then usually about mid-September, you're going to put it into drought, which will put it into dormancy. And stop watering it, bring it inside, put it in your basement, someplace that's relatively cool. Let it let the leaves die back, let it dry out. It will sit like that for about 8 to 10 weeks, and then you can repot it and start watering it again. And as long as you did a good job of fertilizing it and keeping it healthy through the summer, it will have stored up enough energy to make a new flower bloom.
The temperature in the fall is very critical. During that dormant period, it should be around 50 to 55 degrees, and it needs to be that way for about 8 weeks. Those cool temperatures actually initiate flower development,
right.
So without that, if it's warmer than that, they may not bloom.
Yeah, that's why I like the basement.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Is it worth it?
I think so.
Yeah, okay. I think it's a fun project, and it sounds difficult, and it's a little daunting at first, but it actually isn't that bad, especially once you figure out the timing of it.
All right. Let's talk about another bulb. We see a lot of paper white narcissus also available this time of year. What are your thoughts about those?
Oh, well, you know, there are two thoughts to have about paper whites. There are the people who love the little daffodil-like flowers.
And who can't stand the smell.
And the people who can't stand the smell.
Right. Some have a very strong, musky fragrance. Most of them do.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some that have a very pleasant, fruity fragrance. So choose wisely.
How do you know? By
variety.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. And even, you know, and even some folks, even the ones that are relatively better smelling, still offend some people. It's one of those smells that some people are really offended by it and other people are not. I don't know if it's genetic. I don't know what it is that makes people smell different things with these plants, but certainly some people do get very turned off by the odor.
All right. So do you know the varieties that smell better, Richard? Do you have those
on
the top of your head?
Boy, not offhand.
Okay.
I don't.
Ziva usually smells a little bit better than the rest of them, and that's a fairly common cultivar. But even that one, I mean, that's the one we grow at Ryman Gardens, and there are some people who do not like the smell of even that one. So
they are awfully pretty, though.
They are very pretty.
And is the care pretty similar to an amaryllis?
It is. It is very similar. They don't need a cold period for flower development. So you're just going to pot them up. You're going to pot them up so that the tips just poke out of the soil. And again, using a nice potting soil, all of that stuff. Water them. They will grow. They will flower. They'll probably flop over a little bit. That's pretty common for paper whites. So have a plan for that, whether you want to put in like a little ring or prop them up with something. The more light you provide them, the less likely they are to get floppy. But that does happen. So don't feel bad if it happens to you.
All right. And again, regular water, because if they get too dry, then you're going to have bad results.
And if they get too wet, you'll have the same bad results. So
another smell on top of the smell.
Yeah, yeah. So like all bulbs, they're going to want to dry out a little bit between watering. Not bone dry, of course, but you want to make sure that the soil is dry at the surface before you're watering the pot.
All right. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. With me, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and Richard Giron, horticulturist with Iowa State University Extension. We'd love to hear from you as well. We're going to talk about great gifts for gardeners here in a moment, and we'd love to get your suggestions. Why don't you send us an email? talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org is our email. We would love to hear from you. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we've been talking about some of the beautiful bulbs you can force during the winter months. We're also going to talk about great gift ideas for gardeners. We'd love to hear your suggestions. Maybe tell us what the best gift you've ever received as a gardener, or also we want to hear your questions for Richard and Aaron. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we were having a little bit of phone trouble earlier. We've got it fixed. So if you were frustrated earlier, call back again. 866-780-9100. With me, Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension, and Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. And let's talk about some great gift ideas. Do you have anything on your wish list this year, gentlemen?
Tools are always nice.
Yeah. Especially really high-quality ones.
Yes.
I think sometimes gardeners, in their effort to buy as many plants as possible, don't invest the money in as many tools. So if you can provide a very high-quality tool to somebody, you know, a pruner's that actually has parts that can be replaced when they wear out, or a really nice pruning saw, it's something I think most gardeners really appreciate.
All right, maybe go out into the tool shed and see what looks like it doesn't work.
Exactly, yeah. And price usually is an indication,
yes,
of quality when it comes to garden tools. So the more expensive it is, it is going to be a higher quality tool in most
All right.
cases.
And it sounds like pruners are the ones that you think maybe those are the tools that you absolutely need the most. What are some of the other tools, though, that you might want a really high quality version of?
A good watering can, solid, that's not going to break or whatever.
I think a pruning saw, a really nice pruning,
yes,
saw, is a good thing to have. It makes nice, good, clean cuts on your plants. It works properly, so you don't saw as much. Like, a pruning saw is a really nice one.
A soil knife.
Yeah.
Sometimes called a hori-hori knife. But that's great because you can actually dig with it. You can cut with it. It's multi-purpose, which is really great.
And sometimes those tools people aren't familiar with, and so they're more hesitant to buy it because they're not familiar with it. So if you give it as a gift, you can open a new world for them.
Cool. And also, it's a good idea to make up your wish list if non-gardeners are shopping for you, right?
Yeah.
All right. And also, of course, this is a great time of year to spend time planning what you want to do in the garden. And there's an opportunity for people to get involved in a course, an online course with Iowa State University Extension about garden design, right?
Correct. Yes. That is coming up. And as far as if you go to, let me find my material. If you go to the Iowa State University homepage and go up in the right-hand corner and type in online garden design, that will bring you to the site. It's an online course, strictly online. It's going to be held this winter, and there are five components to it. For example, introduction to landscape graphics, plant materials and how to design them, garden composition development, and garden history, advanced landscape graphics, and final capstone project. And you can register online. The cost is $3.99, and you can do this just online.
All right. So it sounds like a great way to dream away the winter and learn a lot of stuff. Also, possibly a great gift for a gardener in your life. And the deadline to sign up is really soon. It's like today
December
or tomorrow.
December 10th. Okay. December 10th, yes.
All right. Let's get to the phones. You can join the conversation with your questions, your suggestions for great gifts for gardeners. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Wendy is up first in Iowa City. Hi, Wendy.
Hi. I just have two quick questions about the bulbs you talked about. One amaryllis I did keep from last year. I did not fertilize it, but it did receive sun in my garage. And now I do have about four really tall leaves coming out of it. But I just wondered, without fertilizing it, do you think I have hope for a flower?
Well, it needs to go dormant. There's hope. It needs to go dormant, and it needs to rest for about 8 weeks at a temperature of 50 to 55. Those temperatures are critical. I'm thinking probably it has stored up enough food, so if it has the right temperatures, I think it will eventually bloom.
Okay, good. Hope so. And then my second one is, have you, with the narcissus, tried online? I saw a recipe one part rubbing alcohol to 10 parts water to try to get a shorter bloom on the paper wipes. I just wondered if you guys tried that.
Oh, like to keep the stalks shorter?
I've never seen that.
Yeah. Swapping.
I have not tried that. I think both of us are a little skeptical of it.
Right. Yes. Sounds a little iffy, kind of like you're poisoning the plant to keep it short.
It's hard to do. I mean, the greenhouse tray does use some growth regulators on bedding plants, but I've never seen those used on forced bulbs, per se.
All right. Wendy, if you give it a try, let us know how it works out. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Marilyn's up next in Eldora. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi. I have a question for both horticulturists. My husband and I live on 8 acres. Part of it is wild and wooded, and we were cutting and treating invasive species on our property, specifically honeysuckle and the oriental bittersweet. Will it still be effective to cut and treat both of those through the winter now?
Boy, I think with Roundup, probably not very effective. I'm most familiar with Roundup. That's a very common herbicide, and it does a very good job. But typically, Roundup is most effective when the plants are actively growing. And during the winter months, they're basically dormant. So I don't think Roundup would be very effective during the winter months.
No, we were using a combination of triclopyr and Roundup, mostly triclopyr.
Okay.
Yeah. I think most herbicides work in that same fashion. And so I do think you're going to have better luck applying the treatments when the plants are actively growing. Certainly, you can still go out and clear stuff over the winter and then be ready for it when it comes up. But you might be doing double duty because you'll probably go back out then again and treat again.
Well, we just treat the stump.
Right,
so,
It still needs to be actively growing, though, to pull that stuff down into the plant,
okay.
And then it needs to use it. So it needs to, you know, be growing and respiring and doing all the things that plants do. And a lot of plants really hold up on that stuff during the winter months. And so it won't likely be as effective as it would be when the plant's growing.
Okay, so it sounds like you get the winter off, Marilyn.
Okay. All right. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call.
All right. Yeah. Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Brenda's up next in Muscatine. Hi, Brenda.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Sure.
I had a question about a houseplant I have, if that's all right.
Sure.
About a year and a half ago, I received, I believe, what it's called a money plant or a money tree.
Okay.
As a gift, and he was, I have anthropomorphized him. I call him Bill because he's a money tree, but he was about 8 inches tall when I got him. He's up to 3 feet now.
Is it growing in
and
water?
About 6 months ago, there started to be clear beads that did not drip. So I don't know what they are, like on some of the stems and leaves, like clear. I don't know if it's water or sap, and I'm wondering what that might be.
So I want to make sure we're talking about the same plant. Is this the one that you see sometimes growing in water? It looks a little bit like bamboo.
No, it has a braided trunk.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
A little bit, and I did not continue braiding him, but he is growing by leaps and bounds. In that respect, he's doing good, but
there's
these little, I don't know what they are, but if I accidentally get some of it, you know, on me, it's a little sticky.
And you don't see any evidence of like a scale-like insect or little cottony masses or anything like that on the plant, like a little scab-looking thing.
No, otherwise it seems to be doing really well.
Okay, and it is growing in soil, right?
Yes, that's
okay.
Correct.
Sometimes you find these plants growing in just water, so which isn't always a great long-term way to care for it.
Well, my first thoughts would be if it were an insect like mealybugs or scale, they do suck sap from the plant tissue. They feed on the sugars within the sap, and then they excrete this sticky, clear sap that falls on the lower leaves or on the floor or table. The other thing plants will sometimes do is it's called gutation, where if they're absorbing a lot of water, and they're not getting rid of some of it fast enough, they'll form these little balls of moisture on the stems or leaves of the plant. But it's strictly water. It's not really sugary or sappy. So there's a difference usually. So you said this is kind of sugary or sappy? Then that would kind of suggest
it
more...
It is sticky.
Okay.
It's sticky, all right.
Then that would suggest more an insect rather than gutation. By the plant.
The other thing, it could be, I mean, scale and mealybug are common for honeydew, so are aphids. And usually you would see those kind of towards the growing points. They're sometimes very similar in color to the plant itself, little soft-bodied insects. They would produce honeydew too. But because it's sticky, I think both Richard and I think there might be a little insect at work here.
Okay.
So you might need to do some further.
I'll take a closer look at it then. I might not have been able to see something before.
Mm-hmm.
Now, scale insects are basically, they don't move. They're motionless. And you don't see the typical body parts. You don't see legs and heads. You just see kind of a lump on the actual plant tissue. And so they sometimes camouflage themselves very, very well where you don't really see them easily.
All right. Well,
okay.
Sounds like maybe a
Thank
little more investigation
much.
To do. Brenda, thanks a lot for your call. You can join the conversation with your questions, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Next up, we're going to go to Jan in Granger. Hi, Jan.
Hi. I just heard them talking about the hori-hori knife, and My sister gave me one for Christmas last year because I was too cheap to buy one for myself because I was spending money on plants.
Yep.
And it took me a little while to get up my nerve to use it and to adopt it, and now I could not live without it. It's just I have a little holster on my tool belt, and it's with me all the time, and it's just the coolest thing. I have to be a little careful.
Yes, it's sharp, and that's why the sheath and holster comes in really nice because it is very sharp. So gotta be careful.
Well, absolutely, absolutely. And I had if you have time, I have one more comment about mealybugs, which is we have a thing here that we say fear the mealybug. Because a couple years ago, got a good infestation started, bad infestation started, and I no longer bring in a lot of plants from outside because they will not only overwinter inside, but under the lip of a pot and reinfest next year's stuff. So support your local garden centers and
avoid the mealybug. So let me ask you just before you hang up, Jan, now you can't live without your hori hori knife. What do you use it for?
I do a lot of, it's like you see a weed, you know, over here and even the deep-rooted, tap-rooted things. But, you know, I dig, it's so sturdy that you can even dig a little hole for something and it's, you know, to the point where you could almost plant a whole perennial with it. It's very, very useful.
All right.
And
so it's just always handy.
I heard Aaron talk about it last year, and I thought, maybe I should. And then I was delighted when I got one.
Yeah, that sounds like the perfect Christmas gift.
All right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Jan, yeah, thanks a lot for your call.
Thanks for the show, guys. Bye.
Bye. 866-780-9100 is the number for you to call with your questions or your suggestions for great holiday gifts for gardeners. Steve is up next in West Des Moines. Hi, Steve.
Hello. How are you this morning?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
Well, you had a caller in there just a couple of calls ago about the honeysuckle and treating it in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been working on timber we own for 5 years now doing this and have just about got it all eradicated. And what I have found is the cut stump treatment works great in the winter, but when it gets colder like this, the Roundup's not as effective. I've switched over to Tordon RTU when it's going to be freezing, and I think I have less than 10% grow back the next spring or even that next fall. So, you know, you're not doing a foliar spray, obviously, in the winter, even though sometimes they still have leaves on them this time of year, but it's not very effective. But if she's doing the cut stump like she was talking about, you know, if it's 40 degrees or even better, I'll use the 50-50 glyphosate Roundup. But once it starts getting down around freezing with the Tordon on there, it's very effective. So I just thought I'd share that with her because I've been through this.
Thanks for your call, Steve. Well, and congratulations on nearly getting rid of your honeysuckle. That is quite an accomplishment.
Yeah.
All right, next up we've got James in Cedar Rapids. Hi, James.
Hello.
What's your question?
My question is in regards to getting rid of Creeping Charlie. What's the best way, especially like in perennial beds? It's creeping in from the neighbor's yard.
Yeah, in perennial beds, you're going to have to basically pull it out and dig it out. There's some good news in that ground ivy or creeping Charlie doesn't have a deep root system. So it is possible to dig it up or pull it out. The bad thing is that if you leave just portions of the plant, they will continue to grow. So you have to get it all. So you have to be very, very careful and methodically pull it up or dig it out. But that's the best way. You really can't use a herbicide in that situation.
Right. Okay, that was my question.
All right. Thanks a lot for
Thank
your
you.
Call. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
James, and next up, you know what? We're going to take a short break before we get to the next question, but I think I can sneak in a little email or a little question that was left behind by Tom here from Mason City. He has a red dogwood tree, and the snow bent his trees, I guess a number of trees, and the snow bent them over. So his question is, can he cut them back now, or should he wait till the spring?
I'd wait till late winter, early spring.
Mm-hmm. All right, and that, since he's planning on cutting them back, that won't damage them, right?
Well, the main thing is we don't typically do it in the fall in that those pruning cuts don't really have a chance to seal off, and so they might dry out, and you may experience some winter kill near the pruning cuts. When you do that in late winter, early spring, that doesn't occur. So.
All right. And we are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to answer more of your questions, also to take your suggestions about great gifts for gardeners this holiday season. With me, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension, and Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. The number to call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, our last Hort Day of 2016. We'll be back on the air with Hort Day every other week starting on January 6th. With me today, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. And, of course, they are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And John in Iowa City is up next. Hi, John. Hey, John.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I've got a Christmas cactus that is old, and it just about died, and I'm trying to get it to revive.
Okay. Well, I would just try to give it good, consistent care, meaning bright light. It doesn't need direct sunlight. Keep it a little bit on the dry side. Water it well when you do so. Let it dry out a little bit before you water again. Do not fertilize at this point. I would start fertilizing probably around late March or April. And what you may want to do is to remove a few of the sections and root those. So if something happens to the mother plant, you still have it. They're fairly easy to root. Just remove like a 3 or 4 section part of the plant and stick that in either some coarse sand or perlite. Keep it moist by watering pretty frequently. And those sections typically should root within a few weeks. And then when they do, just pot them up into a nice, well-drained potting soil, and you have new plants in case a mother plant doesn't do so well.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
All right. Thanks a lot, John, and good luck with that one. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Next up, Matt in Mason City. Hi, Matt.
Hello, Charity.
Hi, and you've got some gift suggestions.
Yeah, several years ago, I got my wife a Falco pruners, and that is not just a gift to my wife. That was a gift to our plants, too, because it keeps them healthy, because it's nice and sharp. It cuts effortlessly. And then the other suggestion that I have would be a Rogue brand diamond hoe. We have 2 acres of vegetables, and it's an indispensable tool, but it keeps you upright, and it glides through the soil effortlessly, and really, it's a high-quality diamond hoe.
All right. Great suggestions.
Good.
And
yes,
anything that doesn't destroy your back while you're working on the weeds, that sounds brilliant. And it's not made of diamond. It's shaped like a diamond?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's shaped like a diamond, and the company that makes them from old farm equipment, so it's a really high quality and sharpenable steel.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. Very cool.
I know Seed Savers carries them and some other places in Iowa.
All right. Wonderful suggestions, Matt. Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
Yeah, and happy holidays. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Tom's up next in Des Moines. Hi, Tom.
Hello, Charity.
Hi, what's your question?
You were talking about scale earlier, and I've battled scale on plants before, and usually it seems like it's the cycad and the staghorn fern that I have problems with. My last staghorn fern was a big, beautiful thing, and it was just decimated. So are there any particular plants that are more subject to it than other plants, and how is it spread anyway?
I would say that you can find these almost on any plant, indoor plant. There are a number of different scale species. As far as getting from one plant to another, they can't fly. So basically, if you buy a new plant, put it by itself, kind of isolate it, and leave it there for a few weeks. and check it periodically. And if you don't see anything on it as far as scale or whatever, then you can move it to the other plants. But basically, it goes from plant to plant when they touch, because the scale insect is basically motionless, but it does produce offspring. And these offsprings are called crawlers. They do move, and they move to a new site, begin to feed, and once they do that, then they stay motionless. So they do crawl, they can crawl, but they don't fly. So basically, if they're basically not touching, the other plant should be okay.
Okay. I have another real quick question for you. You talked about propagating the plant. This staghorn that I have left that was decimated, it's growing some new sterile fronds. Is there any way to propagate that to start some new plants?
I'm not sure about the staghorn fern. We'd have to do some more research on that one. That's not a typical plant for us to know a lot about propagating, unfortunately.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Tom.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much for your call, 866-780-9100. Here is an email question from Ashley, talk of Iowa, at iowapublicradio.org. She lives in Ames, and she says, I live on the edge of the woods with a healthy deer population, which is unfortunate for my garden. Do you have suggestions for good landscaping plants that are not palatable to deer, both shade and sun-tolerant plants?
Right. That's difficult, because the main thing with deer and plants is that if deer are hungry, they'll eat basically almost anything. So there's nothing that's truly resistant, because if they're hungry, they'll eat anything. So, but there are a number of publications that you can find on the internet, and I think the title of one of the publications is Plants That Are Not Fond or Plants
That Deer Are Not Fond Of?
Are Deer Are Not Fond Of, yes.
Okay. All right. So she's not the only one to ever ask that question. So I'm sure there's...
No. And every time we suggest a plant, somebody will say, well, the deer ate mine.
Right.
They will eat just about anything. I mean, they have their favorites, like hosta and some other things. But, they'll eat just about anything, so it's hard.
All right, let's get back to the phones. Augie is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Augie.
Hello.
Hi.
Charity and Dr. Durham. My Waterberry Association was very kind in putting a tree on our yard 8 years ago, and it's a scarlet oak, and it has grown into a beautiful large or adolescent tree, because we're surrounded by oaks and bur oaks and red oaks and white oaks and everything. So, and we've lost 20 trees through the years. Through ice damage and heavy snow and breaking limbs. The scarlet oak, if you're aware, retains its leaves through the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, it can take on a lot mm-hmm. of ice and bend limbs down.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, when they put the tree in the beginning, we had an ice storm, and the top of the tree was bent over and stuck in the ground with ice. But it recovered from that. And I notice it has a lot of the roots are coming up around the base of the oak, and I have mulch there, but I notice under the mulch that the roots are kind of like really strong. So it's a strong oak, and I don't know if it interacts and tangles its roots with bur oaks and other oaks in my lawn.
Oh, I'm sure it will, yes.
Okay.
It's probably just a mass of various tree roots, yes, in your lawn.
Okay. Well, thing about the leaves, is it going to be, as it matures, is it going to be a problem with having the ice or snow accumulate on the limbs and the leaves?
Well, it kind of depends upon the weather as far as leaf drop. That's very important. The other thing is that
it keeps the leaves. Scarlet oak keep its leaves through the entire winter.
Well, juvenile trees tend to retain their leaves a little bit longer than mature trees. So as the tree gets bigger and bigger, it may drop a little bit earlier than it is currently, a little bit earlier. because that's a pretty common thing for a young or juvenile tree to retain its foliage a little bit longer than mature trees. So in the future, maybe it will drop a little bit earlier, possibly.
Okay, and we can have problems with really heavy snow.
Absolutely, yes.
Mm-hmm. I think just making sure that the tree, you're training the tree to have good branching structure, that you're
correct.
Avoiding poor branch connections and those kinds of things, making sure that branches as much as possible hit the trunk at a 90 degree and not have kind of very V-shaped splits in the branching will go a long way. And this is the time to make sure that that stuff is happening while the tree is still relatively young, that its major branches are well attached, and that you're doing some pruning to make sure that that happens. It's hard to describe over the radio, but there are a lot of resources out there to kind of show you what good branching looks like. And if that tree has a good branching structure, it will stand up much better to snow and ice coverage. And the other thing is, if it's covered with ice, leave it alone. You'll probably do more damage to it than help if you're trying to free it from ice. So let the tree do its own thing if it does get ice on it, even if it is bending all the way over.
All right. Augie, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Sally in Preston. Hi, Sally.
Hello. I have a question about the pruning saws. What constitutes a high-quality pruning saw or pruning shears and loppers? Mm-hmm. Is it just price, or are there things that we should look for?
Sturdiness is a big part of it, how it connects and those kinds of things. Price will play a point in it. There will be a good indication as to which end you're on. Something that, in particular, the part for me that tends to fail the most on a pruning saw, the folding pruning saws is the joint where it folds. So making sure that that's nice and sturdy. And then all pruning saws will have a slightly flexible blade. So a flexible blade isn't necessarily a bad thing, but the other thing that often happens is the tip will break off of a really cheap pruning saw. And so a nice, sturdy blade is good, but keep in mind that it won't be, you know, it won't be stiff. It's going to be somewhat flexible regardless.
All right. Does that answer your question, Sally?
Yes, that's fine. And is there like a type of blade that there's by side cut blades and there's other types of blades? Can you tell me that?
In terms of, I like the ones that are kind of biserrated, so they have teeth that are pointed in both directions, so they'll cut on the forward stroke and the backward stroke. It's a lot less work for the gardener. They're pretty much impossible to sharpen, so you have to buy a new blade. But the high-quality ones will come apart and let you buy a new blade and keep the handle. So looking for those kinds of things. If the saw has replacement parts, it's likely higher quality for that reason.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Sally, and I hope that helps you with shopping or creating your wish list. Elizabeth is up next. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi. Yeah, I just had some input on last week's show. I heard some comments about powdery mildew on some plants, mm-hmm. and a suggestion to use a fungicide on it. And I've worked in and out of nurseries since I was able to work, but the last nursery I worked for, they had a lot of problems with powdery mildew on their dahlia plants. And what they used was a baking soda solution. And that was about the only thing that they could actually get to work for them. And I just thought maybe it would be helpful for anyone who was maybe looking for an alternative solution to a fungicide. I'm not really sure about what the ratios were or, you know, the exact recipe. I'm not sure if it was a professional recipe or what exactly it was, but it worked.
All right. So look for a baking soda solution possibility. Maybe give that a try. Have you had any experience with that, Richard?
I've seen that. I've never used it myself. There's a number of things that you can use, typically making sure the plant has the proper environment, they're spaced properly, some cultural things that you can do also. And some varieties may be more prone to powdery mildew than others. So there are kind of ways to work around it. But I have seen that. I've never used it myself, though.
All right, another call. Jeremy's on the line in Mason City. Hi, Jeremy.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What's your question?
I want to plant some blackberry bushes along the west-facing side of my house. It gets sun about 50% of the day. In northern Iowa, is there a special kind of blackberry I should be looking for? Or?
Okay, so you want a blackberry, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep, yeah.
Yeah. In Iowa, they're typically not very reliable in that we tend to get severe dieback in them, and therefore they're not very productive. So I would look for things like Prime Jim, Prime Jan, and Prime Arc 45. Those are newer varieties that will bear fruit in late summer, early fall, on the current year's growth. So if they die back in the wintertime, they still produce. The other cultivars typically don't do that. So look for those newer varieties, Prime Jim, Prime Jan, and Prime Arc 45.
All right. Jeremy, thanks a lot for your call. Last call of the day, Francis in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Francis.
Good morning. I was just going to comment. You were talking last week a lot about roses, and we have just a few bushes around our property, probably about five of them. And we just really enjoy having flowers off of them all year long. My wife has roses in the house every day. And people ought to think about planting some roses and stuff like that. They really are easy to grow. We didn't talk, I don't know whether you talk much about the people that will say, well, I lost my rose. People have got to realize that bud union is a real important part of that plant and get the depth on it and stuff like that. They probably wouldn't use it. We were planting a lot of patented roses. Now we're using the knockouts, and I still prefer the tea rose and the Floribunda. I had a Crimson Glory that was right out by my back doorsteps. The kids fell in it a lot when they were younger, and that plant lived to be 35 years old. And it's
well,
amazing how roses will look, make your house look.
They have been introducing quite a few new cultivars over the last 15, 20 years,
mm-hmm.
and some of these new cultivars are hardier as far as winter hardiness, lower maintenance, and so you can have some very nice plants with less care.
But obviously a big proponent of roses, period. Francis, thanks a lot for your call, and we are out of time. Again, we'll be back with Horticulture Day on January 6th. Richard Giron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Happy holidays
you too.
To you. And Aaron Style, thank you.
You're welcome.
What's your big Ryman Gardens holiday display?
We have a garden-scale railroad in the conservatory right now. It is very cool.
Nice. Aaron Style, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens and Ames, and Richard Giron, Horticulturist with Iowa State University Extension. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Have a great weekend.